With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
BangTheBook.com.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Wednesday, September 5th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so, as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Glad to have you with me as we push through the middle of the week here. It is NFL Eve. The NFL kicks off tomorrow night. Falcons taking on the Eagles in that NFL kickoff game. We're going to chat some NFL here on today's show with professional handicapper Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. We'll talk about teaser betting in the NFL. We'll also take a look at the line adjustments from before the preseason to week one here, which is a tactic that Brian has used very successfully in the past. Then we'll also chat some college football with him about week one to week two power ratings adjustments. And we've got three games that we're going to go in depth on, and we'll see if we have time to touch on a couple more. Second half of today's show, I'll tell you about everything that's going on over at bangthebook.com, so we won't do that in the intro today. But then I'll also take a look at the Major League Baseball betting card for tonight, to a look ahead to tomorrow's card, then also some September betting tips because Major League Baseball is still going on, about 3.5 or so weeks of games left until we get to the playoffs. So we don't want to forget about the opportunities that are out there for betting baseball. Obviously, we're spending the majority of our time on football here, but when I get the chance, I want to try to throw some baseball in. And because I've got the open segment here today, I'll go ahead and do that. Don't forget that this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. You sign up at DSI using that promo code BANG100. You'll get 100% deposit bonus for that newly redesigned sportsbook at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. One guest on the program here today, that is professional handicapper Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. Brian, how's it going today, man?
Everything's going great. Looking forward to another busy week of football and baseball.
It is a very, very busy time. And, of course, the NFL starting here on Thursday night. No college football game on Thursday, so at least there's that. But college football, once again, Friday, all day Saturday, NFL all day Sunday. So definitely crunch time for all of us here in this business. But we've all been working hard at it for the last several months anyway. So, Brian, I think the starting point here today for the NFL is, you know, I talked about the wrap-up of the preseason yesterday with Brian Blessing, asked if there was anything that he's looking to carry over from the preseason to the regular season. So I'll pose the same question to you. Anything that happened in the preseason mean anything for you here in week one?
Not really, but I like to see how the lines have moved and what has caused them to move. Certain games, for example, this opening game, Atlanta and Philadelphia, the opening line was 5.5 here, and then now it's down to 2. I'm even seeing a 1 at a couple places. That's anti-Nick Foles move because they're not starting the injured quarterback. He's still not ready to go. Nick Foles got on a great run at the end of the playoffs, give him all the credit in the world. But until that point, he was a journeyman and he was ready to retire. So a lot of people aren't buying into it, and a lot of the what I've heard out of the camps is Philadelphia is basically going through the motions, where Atlanta looking to have a nice bounce back season. So the money's coming in on Atlanta. Makes a lot of sense. It wouldn't surprise me if this game goes off at a pick 'em or maybe even Atlanta favored. A lot of people like to go against the Super Bowl winner in the first game, although I don't think it's worked out as well lately. But I could see why that move has been made from the 5.5 to the 2, 1.5 area.
Well, and of course, this is a huge public game, not just because it's a standalone game in the start of the NFL season, but even if this was a week 3 Sunday game with a 1 o'clock time slot, these are two very public teams, popular teams. And of course, as we'll talk about here on the shows, as we go throughout the NFL season, these teams that have a lot of fantasy football players, you know, they're very public teams in a lot of instances. So, you know, this is one of those games that's probably going to set up in that same type of way. So, Brian, let's sort of work our way through the card here a little bit for week one, and let's talk about some of those games where we have seen some adjustments based on the preseason or based on some of the things that we saw over the summer. a rivalry that you and I know very well. Game 453, 454 on the board, Pittsburgh and Cleveland. What do you think about this one being down to as low as 3.5 at BetOnline, but predominantly 4 market-wide?
Yeah, it opened in the 6.5, 7 range and has been bet down. A lot of it has been for people who like to watch the HBO show. The Browns have been featured on it this year, and you know, they always show a lot of positives in those shows. So they're showing Cleveland in a good light, and a lot of people, you know, are buying into the Cleveland being better. And I agree, Cleveland is better. You like to take a look at their peripheral numbers last year. They were probably a 5.5 to 6 win team. And now, obviously, they've changed quarterbacks, and they went from the quarterback who's the most turnover prone in the NFL to one of the two that don't turn the ball over. And that's going to be a huge difference for this Cleveland team. The only problem is you still got the same coaching staff there in Cleveland. I don't know if I want to buy into the coaching staff, but I like the players. And you could see, I believe they even mentioned it on Hard Knocks last night, that 55% of the players that were on the team last year didn't make it this year. That tells you that they were beat out by newer players, players that were brought in. So I definitely expect Cleveland to be much better this year. The only problem is, if you go back, these two teams played last year, and I believe Pittsburgh was a 10-point favorite. So has there been a 6-point differential in Cleveland? I don't know if it's gone that much. They have the problem with the Pittsburgh player. One of their key players hasn't been to camp yet, but he wasn't in camp last year, and he struggled in game one, so they may not even play him at this point. There's been talk that they play him in game three. I kind of hope he comes in and the line gets adjusted. I'd love to see a 6 again. I don't know if we'll get there. Then I could play Cleveland, but that makes a lot of sense for how this line has moved. Most of the wise guys I've talked to are big on Cleveland. And if you do look at, you know, actual points for, points against, and do all the other things, Cleveland was one of those teams that should have won 5.5, 6 games last year, projected to win about 6 this year. Cleveland's got a decent chance to make the playoffs if they come out and play well this year, because there's a lot of bad teams in the AFC. Is 8 of the top 10 teams are all residing in the NFC this year.
Yeah, and when you look at the Browns from last year, 41 giveaways, that was the most in the NFL. 13 takeaways, that was the fewest in the NFL. They turned the ball over on 21% of their drives last season. So more than one of every 5 possessions ending in a turnover for the Browns, whereas their takeaway percentage, 6.9%, anything but nice for Cleveland. Starting field position, they were a disaster all the way around there with all those turnovers and the minus 28 turnover margin. But from a yards per play standpoint, they were only minus 0.2 yards per play. The opposition running 18 more plays than the Browns. Yeah, they got outscored by a ton of points, but a lot of that had to do with the turnover margin. So very interesting week one game here. And of course, you know, the fact that Le'Veon Bell not there for Pittsburgh, certainly causing a bit of an adjustment in this line early in the week. Ryan, any other games that have had really, I guess we'll go ahead and talk about this one, because this one obviously has had a significant move both over the summer and throughout the preseason. 459, 460, Buffalo and Baltimore. Baltimore over a touchdown favorite now at several shops out there. They're showing 7.5, some showing signs of going up to 8 as well. A lot of people seem to think, Brian, that Buffalo's a bottom 5 team here in the NFL, and this line movement certainly reflects that.
Yeah, this was one I sent to my clients maybe probably a month and a half ago. I believe the line, Baltimore opened 3. I believe the line was 4 at that point, 4.5. And I said, there's no way this thing closes below 7. So it moved pretty fast, and just as I expected it to. So I had to pull it off the board because it didn't have value any longer at the 7.5, 8. Yeah, Buffalo, I happen to think, is the worst team in the NFL. They had a lot of breaks go their way. We talked about Cleveland playing last year and being much better than their numbers were. Well, Buffalo, because of the quarterback, they were a much better team. Now they're going for a guy who's not very good will be their starter, and they've got a guy that many people didn't think was a first-round draft choice as their backup. So Baltimore, I like the situation with Flacco. Flacco's a guy who now has got a little fire in his belly from them drafting a first-round draft pick at quarterback from Louisville. Baltimore's defense is great. I think they're going to feast on this Buffalo offense. Now that we've lost the number a little bit, maybe the better play here would be Buffalo points under. I don't think Buffalo's offense is very good, and that Baltimore defense is terrific. That made a lot of sense the way that line moved, and I saw that one coming a long way away.
All right, so in terms of other line moves here, comparing, because you mentioned this when we first talked about the NFL preseason and what you use the preseason for, and you mentioned that you like to write down the lines, make sure you know what they are before those exhibition games actually start, then go back and revisit them. So we've hit a couple, we've hit three of them here already: Atlanta, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Cleveland, Buffalo, Baltimore. Any other games that have had pretty significant moves over the preseason that you want to touch on?
Well, Seattle and Denver. Denver opened to one. I'm actually higher on Denver, and I don't care for Seattle this year. And now the line's up to basically three, a short three. You can find 2.5 with juices out there. But Denver's a team that had the defense. Now they've got a quarterback that doesn't make nearly as many mistakes as the Three Stooges they had last year. And we've got a Seattle team that just is not as good anymore. They've lost some key players. They've had some injuries, and I've got real concerns about Seattle. This one, as long as you're not laying, you know, minus 110 at three for Denver, I think is a good bet. Always a tough place to play with the altitude, and Seattle away from home isn't quite as good, and I think it's a cheap number on Denver. But that line has moved the two. Looking at other moves, you know, we're seeing basically what we had earlier. One thing I do want to – well, the one Monday night game, the Rams opened pick them, and now we're -4 against Oakland. And there's even a full, couple 4.5s out there. I could see the move. I think it may be too much of a move. I'm not a big fan of Oakland. Don't like to hire a coach. Don't like trading away your best overall player right before the season starts. The Rams are one of those teams that can put points on the board in a hurry. The public's going to be all over them. It's going to be one of the two Monday night games. If I can catch the 4.5 or better, I'll probably end up on Oakland just because I think it's just too much of an adjustment. And I've never even cared for Oakland. And it's just that the Rams have gotten too much publicity and because of that offense. And I think there may be some value on Oakland. But, you know, most of the games are right where they were to start. Some of them have moved. And, you know, there's a lot of people that are high on the Giants. And that one's basically stayed the same. I take a look at how these teams, you know, most of the time you will take the favorites in the game, especially in the NFL. The NFL has got so many people that have an opinion. If you go down the list and play against all the underdogs that have the majority of people betting them, you'll do very well. And a lot of those teams, the Giants and Chicago and the Jets, those are all teams that have the majority of bets on their side, and yet they're the underdog in the game. And I want to avoid those. It's a shame because I've got a nice opening game system that picks the Jets and it picks Chicago and it picks Houston. But I'm not going to go against and ride public perception in those games. I'll just save them and get the best line possible.
Well, and one of the things about the NFL here for week one, and this is something that I'm struggling with as I'm going through the card, and, I mean, these numbers have been up since late April, so they've been massaged. They've been bet into positions where a lot of sharp bettors, the people that mold the market, think that these numbers are pretty good where they are right now. So from a super contest standpoint, I'm having a real hard time finding anything that I perceive to be value for week one. Part of that just because these lines have been out for a while, but also because there is some uncertainty in the NFL here. And again, the same stat that we keep giving out here on this show, 18 new offensive coordinators in the NFL this year. You've had a lot of teams that really haven't played their starters much in the preseason. Atlanta, the Rams, several other teams out there that really haven't let these guys get exposed too much. Green Bay, of course, with Aaron Rodgers. So there's some uncertainty, a little bit of unknown in regards to that. And then you also have, you know, a lot of quarterbacks that probably just aren't ready for the season yet, especially a guy in Indianapolis like Andrew Luck. So I think this is a really challenging week from an NFL standpoint for a variety of different reasons. One thing that you can look to do if you are a little bit caught up with you know, some of the unknowns of the NFL week, you can look to play teasers. Now, I think in week one, teasers are a little bit of a scary proposition because there are so many unknowns. It can be a pretty high variance week. But Brian, walk us through, you know, what you would recommend to bettors overall here throughout the NFL season with regards to using teasers.
Yeah, your thought process on week one is probably correct. The whole point of teasers is to get key numbers in games in which you think the line is right. A lot of people play the games wrong. They'll love the team in the game, and they'll say, well, if I could get them 6 points more, that's even better. Well, that's not the correct way to play teasers. Put teasers, you want to cover key numbers 3, 4, 6, and 7. So basically what you're trying to do is, and I play my teasers, and it has nothing to do with my sides on a game. In fact, I recommend you treat them differently. If you like a side in the game, bet the side. That doesn't mean you want to play the teaser. But what you want to do is cover those key numbers, and it's even better when you get it in a low-scoring game. When you've got less scoring, there's less variance. For example, Buffalo-Baltimore. We talked about Baltimore. It's up to 7, 8.5 teaser protection at some places. But that's what you want to do. If you can't play Baltimore minus the 7, 7.5, you take Baltimore down to 1.5 on a 6-point teaser. The total in that game is 40.5. So basically, if Baltimore wins that game, as long as they don't win by one, you'll win your part of the teaser. And on a teaser, you have to win more than one side, a 2, 3, 4 team teaser. So you just go down the list and find the teams with the lowest totals. We've got, for example, Washington and Arizona. You could find Washington 1 at a couple places. I think Washington will go off the favorite there. But if you liked Arizona and you can catch that 1.5, take it up to 7.5, and you've got a nice teaser leg with Arizona, and the total is only expected to score 44 points. And as you mentioned, you know, Washington's got a new quarterback, and Arizona's a team that's working on new things with a new quarterback. So looking at those is what I take a look at. I try to avoid any total. Like Tampa Bay, New Orleans is sitting at 49.5. Houston, New England, 51. When it gets up over 49, those are ones that have more variance, and I'm not looking to play those. But basically, you're looking at teasers. You're playing numbers. You know, we always talk about playing numbers as opposed to playing teams, and teasers is strictly a numbers game. You want low-scoring games, and you want to cover those numbers. They call them the Wong teasers. Stanford Wong published a book probably a decade ago, and it's still being used. And it's an excellent source, and it basically tells you to cover the key numbers of 3 to 7. So that's what most professional bettors are trying to do. And if you can only find one teaser a week, that's fine, as long as you've got a book that lets you have open spots on your teasers, which is hard to find. But it's another advantage that you can take. You could fill those in later. And teasers are the way to go, which is why the sports books are charging more money for them now. And a lot of times they're moving lines to this teaser protection, like I talked about in that Baltimore game.
Yeah, and teasers can be a very important asset for you. And I don't recommend them in college football at all, because it's so much more of a high variance environment. But from an NFL standpoint, you know, it makes sense. And also, as Brian was talking about there, I think he made a really important point, so I want to drive this home. You look to use teasers in harmony with the things that are out there in the betting market. And what I mean by that is, like Brian said, Buffalo, Baltimore, total down to 40.5, expected to be a low scoring game. So you take Baltimore down to 1, 1.5, wherever you have to take them. You know, you would expect that Baltimore should win this game, but it could wind up being closer than the 7-point spread. So that's why you take a team like that down. Pittsburgh and Cleveland. There's a couple stray 4.5s out there in the offshore market with Pittsburgh as the 4.5-point favorite. If you like Cleveland in that spot, you didn't get 6.5, 4.5. You're not really crossing anything too significant. But if you've got a 4.5 out there, or you want to play a 6.5-point teaser, you can take the Browns up to 10.5 with a total that's been coming down from 47 to 45.5, which would imply that the people that set the market are expecting a lower scoring game. If you can get double digits in a game expected to be lower scoring, that's a plus EV bet for you long term. As long as the Browns take care of the football, move it a little bit, you know, then they should be in pretty decent position for a plus 10, plus 10.5 type of teaser. So you want to do, you want to look for the context in the betting market, but then also use those totals as deciding factors for your teasers.
Definitely. And you want to take a look at how the teams plan on playing. If it's a team that throws a lot of passes as opposed to running. I'm not sure I want them in a teaser. I'd prefer a team that keeps the ball on the ground, runs the clock. So anytime you run time off the clock, that's going to help your teaser if you're playing the underdog. And so that's something I take a look at. I want a team that wants to be able to run the clock when they've got a lead. That was one of the things with Cleveland. They couldn't run the ball last year when they had a lead. And, of course, they stopped passing the ball because they knew their passing game was terrible. So, I always talk about the Kansas City Chiefs when Marty Schottenheimer was there. They wouldn't turn the ball over, and they would run the football. And that they were gold on teasers. And that's what you're looking for, teams that can run the football and teams that play good defense. And you'll be able to figure those out in no time in the NFL.
One last thing I want to ask you about here with regards to the NFL, and then we'll transition over to the college side for a few minutes. I know you've talked about this in college football where you put a lot of emphasis on first half stats because that's when the game plans are being executed. In the second half, things may not be going your way. You may have to change something up. You may be playing from behind. You may be playing with a big lead, so on and so forth. So when you chart everything that's happened in a game, you really look a lot at the first half for college football. Do you tend to do the same thing with the NFL?
I do, although the NFL doesn't have the blowouts like they do in college, especially if it's a divisional game. Teams don't want to rub it in on a divisional opponent, which is why, divisional dogs are always a very good play in the NFL. I pay attention to it, but it's not nearly – you don't see the mismatches like you do when you see an Alabama play an Alcorn State or whatever. The worst teams in the NFL and the best teams in the NFL are a lot closer than what they are in college. So just try to take a look at how the team plays. The problem you run into is if an underdog, for example, let's say Cleveland's playing Pittsburgh this week, Cleveland jumps out to a 14-0 lead, that takes both teams out of their game plan coming into the game. So if you cut it off at halftime, then it's a little bit more true as opposed to the full game where you're going to see Pittsburgh – throwing the ball a lot more and Cleveland running the ball in the second half. So I still like to look at the stats for the full game, but I also like first half, but I spend more time with full half on first half in college than I do in the pros.
All right, let's transition over to the college football side here. We're seeing a lot of movement in the betting market this week for college football, and that's hardly a surprise. A lot of people looking to take advantage of week one to week two overreaction. A lot of the guests that we have on the show off to slow starts here. I'm off to a slow start as well. Taking some solace here this week in the fact that a lot of my numbers from my power ratings were pretty close, and the ones that were off are moving towards my numbers. So that does make me pretty happy, and hopefully things go a little bit better for me here this week. But, Brian, in terms of adjustments from week one to week two, what are some of the things, some of the teams that you've adjusted based on what we saw last week?
Well, a lot of it, I wait until they play the two games, but I couldn't wait anymore on Colorado State and Hawaii. New Mexico State, I brought down a little bit, but they actually have some positives in their stats, so I don't think they're going to be too bad. But, I was talking to Brad and Rolf the other day. We were heading down to sign up for the Golden Nugget contest, and I said my line coming in to this year would have had – Hawaii is a pick'em in this game, and now they're a 17-point favorite. I said I cannot remember a game or a team where after 2 weeks totally changed, and even Brad pointed out, he says, yeah, this Hawaii team is the real deal. And, I hate to see the real – throw away all your work that you've done in the preseason, but, yeah, they look really good. And I had Navy last week, and I thought it was a great bounce-back spot to bet against a Hawaii team who won on national television. And and just like the rest of you, I've gotten off to a slow start in college football. So that one is really amazing to me. And Colorado State, just take a look at their numbers. They've shown nothing that I want to back them at all so far this season. And that's something that I didn't expect coming into the season. I know the coach was out, but take a look at one of the things I look for, three things I really look for when I look at college football and looking at the games they played. Colorado State's played two games so far. They've given up 88 points and scored 47, but they've won the turnover battle. They're up one on the season. The sack battle, they haven't had a sack all season. They've been sacked three times. But take a look at what they've done on early down success rate. And early down success rate is something that Warren Sharp uses for the NFL, and I think it's got a lot of credence in college too. And that's how many of your first downs you get on first and second down. And Colorado State's opponents, Hawaii, in game one, 80% of the first downs they were able to get in the first two downs on the drive. Colorado, 83%. Now, when you're letting the opposition get first downs on 83% of their possessions on the first two plays, that tells you how bad this defense is. So, you know, they're playing Arkansas this week, and Arkansas is going through some changes over there also. But this Arkansas offense could put points on the board, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if Arkansas hits at least 50 in that game against Colorado State. And that's a game that, you know, I haven't taken a good look at totals yet, but there's no way I'd be looking to play that one under the total.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I think I mentioned this on the show earlier in the week, but I was going up to a buddy's lake house on Sunday, and BetOnline's openers popped, and I had printed out my power ratings numbers because, you know, I'm looking to get in front of the market here. And I had my wife sitting in the passenger seat, you know, going through and taking care of business with those, and did grab Arkansas -9.5. That number is 13.5 out there now. So very happy to get that one. But, you know, these things move so quick on Sundays too. And Colorado State, like you said, we have two data points for this team. We know, especially defensively, that they are horrible. So, you know, we've got a pretty good idea there in Arkansas. Playing with some more tempo there with Chad Morris, you know, should be in a pretty decent spot in Fort Collins this week. The Hawaii thing is interesting to me. I mean, I talked to Rolf Michaels on the show yesterday. He doesn't do his power ratings adjustments until about 2 or 3 weeks into the season himself. He said Hawaii would be about a 14-point adjustment for him. I have not moved Hawaii nearly that much. But then as I look at my line here against Rice this week, I've only got Hawaii as a 10-point favorite. So pretty clear, I mean, and I know Rice is awful, pretty clear that I need to do a little bit more to adjust Hawaii. I just don't know. Like, so the Navy thing, right? I was already down on Navy coming into the season. Now, I did play Navy last week. Actually doubled up on them when the line went down a little bit. They go out and give up 59 points in that game. So I wasn't high on Navy anyway, but they were in a spot where I liked them last week. That's the concern I have with Hawaii is maybe Colorado State's just really, really awful. Maybe Navy's just going to have a big-time down year for them. I'm not ready to go full bore on Hawaii yet, but if I don't make a significant adjustment, it's going to force me to bet against them, and I'm not doing it this week with Rice. But you know, as we go down the line here, that is a consideration you have to make.
Yeah, I still have, for the most part, all my opening week lines, which is, like I said, Hawaii at Pick'em. I'm aware of what these teams have done. So just because I make the line Pick'em doesn't mean I'm going to play Rice. It just means I don't know where to put these two teams at the moment because Rice is a team that has struggled so far. They played a good half last week against Houston. But if you look at the rest of their stats for the game, they were not impressive at all. Hawaii could have another huge game this week, and it may be, as you pointed out, that they just happen to be playing three of the worst teams in college football that on a perception basis, Navy's not going to be one of the worst teams, but they could be an overrated team. So when they played three teams that were overrated and they're underrated, you know, obviously they're going to start covering some spreads, and you don't want to make too much of an adjustment on it. And like I said, I still have my week coming into the season numbers, and I just make small adjustments. Like this week right now, I'm just finally getting all of my stats done in which I can go back and change the power rating. So that's something that I know what the original power rating was, and now when I got two data points on some of these teams, it's a lot easier. If you've only got the one, you don't know what to do. For example, you know, if we're going back to Colorado State, they have two games under the belt, but the second game they played against a team who hadn't played yet. So you would figure that's a big, they always say it's a big advantage once you have that game under your belt, which makes Colorado State even worse than what we thought they were, unless Colorado's really good. And I think Colorado's a little bit better than what most people think.
All right, let's get into some games here for week two. We're going to touch on three of these games, two of them featuring a MAC team, and the MAC has been Brian's specialty for a long time here. He's very, very good in the Mid-American Conference. We'll start with one of them, game 309-310. Western Michigan takes on Michigan in the Big House in Ann Arbor. Wolverines up to a 28-point favorite now. This number opened 24.5 at bookmakers, so really only been going up throughout the week here. We did see a little bit of bounce back and forth early in the week, maybe some people looking to play the numbers, massage the market a little bit, but now it's been pretty steady Michigan money throughout Tuesday and on into Wednesday as well. Brian, I think this is a very intriguing game for a lot of different reasons. Michigan last week had that big game against Notre Dame, didn't play particularly well, lost that game. Western Michigan seemed to have a lot of trouble with Syracuse's tempo, but they got the offense going a little bit in garbage time. Little brother versus big brother game here. What do you think about game 309-310?
Well, a lot of people, and it makes a lot of sense. They want to play one of the top teams off of a loss. But keep in mind, under Harbaugh, the team is only 3-6 against the spread off of a straight-up loss. So they haven't really bounced back big time. They are playing the Western Michigan, one of the teams in from the MAC that obviously loves to play teams in the Big Ten. Western Michigan has done very well when stepping up in class and playing Big Ten opponents over the years. Last year they played very well against USC in that opener, and everybody was talking about that. Maybe they're back, and then they played Michigan State, and they did lose that game, but that was the Michigan State team that was off a loss, I believe, in their first game. So a lot of reasons to take Michigan. Obviously, their defense is a lot better than what it showed against Notre Dame, but I still have concerns about this offense. I made this line about 27, so I don't think I'm going to have much of an opinion either way. But, you know, Western Michigan in that game last week, they lose the game by 13. I was on Western Michigan. That was one of my losses. They lost the turnover battle by one, but they won the sack battle, and their 88-65 was the first down success rate. So they were successful on first downs, higher than what you would expect for a team that that lost by that much. So they had a lot of positives, even though they lost the game. Michigan also has some positives. They did lose that turnover battle. They did lose the sack battle 3-2, and that's a concern. But I think the line's about where it should be. If I was to play anything, I'd probably play the dog, but there's enough games where I don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, I mean, my number in this game is Michigan minus 24. So if this thing gets up over 28, I think I may wind up taking a small piece of the Broncos here. I do like the Broncos. I do like them with John Wessink. I thought they were very good with him last year. And, you know, I was on Western Michigan last week, too. I had that game more like a pick 'em. Syracuse just blitzed them early in the game. That was the problem for Western Michigan. Aaron Dungy ran for 200 yards in that game. Shea Patterson's not running around for 200 yards in this game. If Western Michigan can play more of a straight-up base defense, and you can do that against Michigan, I think they probably have a little bit more success here in this spot. And like I mentioned on Monday's show, watching that Notre Dame-Michigan game, Shea Patterson is very good at throwing on the run. I didn't like watching him at all in the pocket, dancing around too much, didn't step into any of his throws because he felt like the pocket was collapsing around him so much earlier than it actually was. That kind of concerns me a little bit for the Wolverines here, especially if they have to go out and cover a big number. Can they run it down Western Michigan's throat? They probably can, but to do so to the point where they can cover four touchdowns, I'm not sure.
Yeah, you take a look at Michigan last year, their highest scoring game was 36 points in the entire season, and now you're laying close to 10 points less than that in this game. So it's a high price to pay for Michigan. If you're buying into their offense being better, maybe you could play that side, but I'm not buying into it at this point.
All right, here's a pretty interesting game here. Game 375-376 on the board. Fresno State and Minnesota. So we're taking a big leap here in rotation number, but this is a fascinating game. So Minnesota blows out New Mexico State last week. Not really a big surprise considering New Mexico State looked so bad in week one. They wind up looking pretty bad here, or week zero, I should say. They wind up looking pretty bad in week one as well. Minnesota looked a lot better than expected though, I think. And you know, it's one of those things where you kind of ask yourself, is Minnesota that much better? Or is New Mexico State just that bad? Maybe we find out this week with the Golden Gophers is a 2.5-point favorite at home.
Yeah, Minnesota wins that game by 38 points, but they didn't have a turnover advantage. They broke even on turnovers. Normally when you've got a 22-point favorite as Minnesota was, they're going to have the turnover edge. So for them to do so well without the turnover edge can tell you one of two things. They're a better team or they're not physical enough, which would be causing turnovers. They did have the sack advantage 4-0, but actually New Mexico State did very well on first down or early down success rate. They just didn't have many first downs, but when they had them, they made them early in the drive. So Fresno is a team coming off that Idaho game last week. Fresno really played well last year. They go from a 1-11 team to 10-4 under Jeff Tedford. This is his second season. Was that a fluke last year, or is this the way Fresno is and Fresno's back to where they used to be a few years ago? They won 11 in 2013 under Tim DeReuter. So I don't know what to make of that. I do know that I like to fade teams playing on the road when they have a long road trip. And Fresno doesn't go east of the Mississippi very often. And that's something that you got to keep in mind. This is also their first road game of the season. Just looking at who they played last year, they were on the road, Boise, Wyoming, Hawaii, San Jose State, San Diego State, Washington. They did go to Alabama. They went to Alabama, lost that game by 31. They actually played pretty well, and that told you right there that they were going to have a pretty good season. They fought really well against Alabama, but they were getting, 43.5 points in that game. So a rare situation. Fresno's obviously used to the weather being in Fresno and Minnesota. You get a lot of the cold weather there come wintertime. But I don't know what we can get out of Minnesota yet, but I made the line pick 'em going into the season. Now the line is 3. Has there been that much of an adjustment? Was Minnesota 3 points better last week than what they should have been? Possibly. This is also a game that I'm probably going to learn from more. If Fresno comes out and plays Minnesota really tough here, I'm pretty confident that Fresno will be close to repeating what they did last year. And that's a good thing for this program under Jeff Tedford. If they get blown out in Minnesota, who isn't really more than a minimum or a median team out of the Big Ten, that is something to be concerned about. So it's more of a learning experience for me on this game. I'll probably be sitting on the sideline.
My number's 4 on this one. I did adjust Minnesota up a little bit going into week 1 because I had their number way off against New Mexico State. Let's look at Fresno State here for a minute. So they score 79 points against Idaho, which is certainly impressive. Anytime you can hang almost 80, there's a lot to be said about that. Fresno was plus 7 in turnover margin. They returned 2 field goals for touchdowns. They had a pick 6. They had a 5-yard touchdown drive, a 45-yard touchdown drive, 40, 35. They just had a bunch of short fields to work with and then had 3 special teams or defensive touchdowns. They only had 6.7 yards per play in this game. So they put up a big number, but they didn't really do a ton offensively. They had a lot of short fields and a lot of turnovers. So when it comes to Fresno State here, I don't know how much you can evaluate from that game. When it comes to Minnesota, I'm still not sure about them either. So if this number, now that this number is down to 2.5, maybe my power ratings suggest a lean on Minnesota, but that's one thing I'd be very cautious of. And this is why you want to do box score study, why it's very, very important to do that. Fresno State only outgained Idaho 486 to 307 in a game that they won by 66 points. So you always want to go back and check the box scores.
Definitely. A lot of special teams play. A lot of defensive scores. There's actually, you talk about 7-0. There was actually one team that won their game 9-0 in the turnovers this week. So I don't know what we'll get out of that game either. But turnovers are strange. If you were to tell somebody who won the turnover battle before the game, you'd have a really good spread record. The problem is you don't know who's going to win the turnover battle. You have pretty good ideas. I talked about it in the NFL. Teams don't turn the ball over. Teams don't throw passes into coverage. You got a pretty good idea, but there's still games where you're going to have something strange like a 7-0 or 9-0, and you don't know what the hell to make out of that because it's it's basically one of those that you just have to put it in your pocket and say, well, we'll see how it goes, but did we really learn anything out of that game?
One more game to hit on here with Brian Leonard. This is Cincinnati and Miami of Ohio, game 379-380. Technically, Miami of Ohio is the home team, but this is a neutral site game at Paul Brown Stadium. Not really the most neutral of sites because Cincinnati is playing basically at home at Paul Brown Stadium. They've done it before. It's not Nippert Stadium, but they don't really have to travel very far for this one. Miami of Ohio, slight favorite, but two of the sharper offshores here, Pinnacle and the Exchange Matchbook, showing Pick'em. The Greeks got Miami 2. Several other places have Miami minus 1. So really interesting spot here. Cincinnati coming off of the outright upset win over UCLA, which I think says more about the Bruins than it does about the Bearcats. You got any thoughts on this game, Brian?
Yeah, I definitely do. This is one of those that I put out early for my clients. I did play Miami in this game. Going back to the Cincinnati-UCLA game, there was no turnover advantage for either team in there, and Cincinnati won the sacks 5-4. But keep in mind, they're playing a UCLA team, new coach, new system, and Cincinnati's had Luke Fickell for the second year, an Ohio State assistant coach. I think Cincinnati will be better this year than they were last year, 4-8 last year. I like Fickell, liked him at Ohio State, and I think he's going to do good things here at Cincinnati. But I didn't raise Cincinnati at all based on that because of the situations with UCLA. UCLA dropping would be the way that I would take a look at that. And you take a look at Marshall and Miami, and Marshall wins that game 35-27. We talked about that a little bit last week as I had Marshall favored, and I was one of the few that had that situation. I think I had Marshall as a 4-point favorite. But in that game, there was no turnover advantage. Miami won the sack battle 2-1. Teams played pretty equal when it came to early down success rate. So I took that as a positive out of Miami, even though they lost the game. And now they're playing the Cincinnati team that Cincinnati's won 12 straight in this series. If you're a Cincinnati player and you just went on the road and won as a 17-point underdog or whatever it was, 14.5, I think it closed, at UCLA, it was huge for you to be able to play on the West Coast anyway, because you never get to play on the West Coast. Now you come home and you're playing what is considered a one-way rivalry. Are you really going to get up for this game? Now, granted, they only have Alabama A&M on deck, so there's nothing to look ahead for. But, you know, Miami's the team that wants this game, and they're coming off of a loss. And I just think Miami's had a poor record on games decided by a touchdown or less. Now, is there real meaning for that, or is it just chance? And I Brad and I talked about that a little bit, and I think it's more chance than anything. You're going to have your wins. You're going to have your losses. Like I said, they lost last week by 7. That's the par for the course the way Miami has been. But I just think Miami's the better team here, and you're getting them on a neutral, and I like the situation, so I played Miami.
And when you talk about the situation here, as you mentioned, Cincinnati really one-sided rivalry. Last year's game, I had Miami in this spot. I don't remember offhand what the line was, but I know I got some serious line value on it. They're up 17-6, under 3 minutes to go. Cincinnati scores a touchdown, gets the two-point conversion. It's a 17-14 game. Miami throws the ball, throws a pick six, loses 21-17. They gave up, 15 points in the last 3 minutes of this game last year. So if you want to talk about a revenge game, if you want to talk about a team with a chip on its shoulder, Miami of Ohio is probably the biggest one this week.
Yeah, in that game last year, Miami was a 5-point favorite. They were winning 7-3 at the half, and they only allowed 17 points in the entire game. So they allowed 14 points late in that game, and they allowed 21 points in that game. So obviously those 18 points after halftime hurt them, especially in the last 3 minutes. So a lot of reasons for Miami to be the team, but they've got to be able to win these close games. And I think it's just a random fact, and I like them in this contest.
Brian Leonard, professional handicapper from wagertalk.com. What do you guys got going on over there right now, Brian?
Shooting videos today. Looking forward to it. We're getting some good. We've got more guys shooting videos, which means more games we can handicap. And we've done a pretty good job on those, and we're looking to have another big week. And plenty of good games this week to make some profit. I always like betting game two or week two in college football because of all the overreactions. We talked about a couple of them, but it's a good time to bet college football this week. And if you don't make money this week, you're probably doing something wrong because you're going against the public most of the time this week. And it's a bad, it should be a bad week for the public bettors.
Well, make sure that you follow Brian on Twitter at @BLeonardSports. Brian Leonard, wagertalk.com. Appreciate the time, bud. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you. Take care.
Always fun to chat football, NFL, and college with Brian Leonard, professional handicapper over at wagertalk.com. All right, so told you at the top of the show here, I'm going to tell you about everything that's going on over at bangthebook.com once I got past that segment there with Brian. So I got some time here to chat with our listeners at the end of today's show. Over at bangthebook.com, my daily MLB picks and tips piece has been updated once again. So you've got stuff for today's action. Of course, updated every day over there at the website. NHL team previews rolling out from Parker Michaels. Those are absolutely fantastic. Extremely detailed. The best I have seen in the business here so far. So make sure that you go and check those out. Also, Admir's done his NBA previews for us. Also doing some stuff with tempo, shot selection, some good betting angles for the association when that rolls around here next month. We've got WNBA, additional football content from Alan Moody. We've got Danny Vorgs' updated NFL power ratings, my updated college football power ratings. I'll do NFL Daily Fantasy here today, UFC, golf, NASCAR, you name it. We've got it over at bangthebook.com, where we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Don't forget about the Bang the Book NFL Super Contest. That will start here this week. Obviously, you have to make sure that you sign up this week. You will be shut out if you don't sign up before Sunday's 1 p.m. deadline and get those picks in. Cash prizes available. Everything over there on our contest page, bangthebook.com. Contests up at the top right next to sportsbooks that you can go and get involved in. Not just the super contest. Obviously, that's a big one that you want to get into, but also our streaker contest, our monthly contests. Cash prizes available for those as well. So if you put together a streak or seven or more, you're going to get some money. Put together 10 or more, you're going to get some more money. And if you win those monthly contests as well, you've got a chance to win some of those cash prizes. And you just sign up with an email address. We shoot you our newsletter on a daily basis, give you an idea of what's happening over there at the website. That's all that we do with that. So you don't have to worry about your information being shared or anything like that. We just go ahead and send you that Bang the Book newsletter. Podcasts are available archived at bangthebook.com, Spotify, Spreaker, Stitcher, TuneIn, Podbean, wherever you're looking for it. You're probably going to find Bang the Book Radio. Full shows also available over at the website as well. And I've told you this before, and I'll tell you this again here. The full shows are just the uncut audio. That's just whatever Blog Talk Radio produces for us. They've done a better job with their quality over the last few years. With the segments, I changed some volume things. I kind of cut out some awkward pauses or whatever else, or as much background noise as I possibly can. So the segments are available on iTunes and Spotify, and then also over at bangthebook.com. So whatever you want to do, if there's only, you know, if there's a couple of guests on a show and you only like one of them, just listen to that one. If you don't care about Major League Baseball, you're probably not still listening to this one. But again, it's very, very easy, very accessible for you to get all of the past editions of Bang the Book Radio. So we still got Major League Baseball going on right now, and I know it's really taken a back seat, and it's very, very hard for me because historically, and I will be very upfront and transparent about this, historically, September is pretty far and away the worst month of the year for me. Now, I don't know if this is because I'm doing more with football, a little bit busier from a work standpoint with everything that's going on, or just simply the fact that I think September is a pretty high variance month. Now, you've got a lot of really massive favorites out there. You've got bad teams playing against each other, and you don't really know what they're going to look like. You've got teams like the Indians who have a big lead in the Central Division. They finally showed up last night, but they've been playing like ass for the last week and a half. That happens sometimes. The good teams kind of packing it in a little bit. The Indians know they're going to play Houston in the first round. It's just a matter of where that series is being played. And right now, they don't really have enough games left to overtake Houston for home field in that. So they know. They know exactly what their playoff situation is going to be. Now, there are teams that don't know. The wild card chase in the National League, the division races in the National League. You would expect those teams to come out on a daily basis and play hard. But again, think about any sport, whether it's basketball, the NHL, NFL, college football, MLB, doesn't really matter. When you're playing for your playoff life on a daily basis, it's hard. It's stressful. It's taxing. It's a lot. You don't have a whole lot of margin for error. If you're not playing for a damn thing, you're free and easy. You're just going out there and playing the game. And it sounds cliche, and you know, maybe you don't want to believe it, but when you look at some of these teams, particularly some of these bad ones, or at least the teams that aren't as bad as others, you wouldn't expect Baltimore to be any good, obviously. Detroit and Chicago stuck playing each other here this week. When you have teams that are really, really bad, yeah, they're not going to be that invested. But when you have teams that are maybe a little bit younger, but a lot of major league ready types of guys, they're going to be more invested. They're going to be out there and keep going. Look at the Tampa Bay Rays, for example. They're having a fantastic season. They've already blown away their season win total, or at least they're going to be very close to doing so. They have no shot at the playoffs. No shot whatsoever. When you look at the teams in the American League, outside of maybe Houston, Tampa Bay is probably the hottest team in the American League right now, and they have nothing to play for except for pride. So September is a very high variance environment. It's probably the reason why it's such a difficult month for me. We've got a lot of data points. We know pretty much everything we need to know about these guys taking the ball every 5 days. We get some pitching changes and things of that sort. We saw one yesterday, Miles Mikolas getting an extra day for the Cardinals, John Gant making the start there. It happens. You get bets canceled because of that and things of that sort. Teams going with six-man rotations or teams going with bullpen days. You know, these things happen in the month of September. They can be very difficult handicaps. So there are a lot of reasons as to why September is probably the worst month for me. But I think a lot of it just has to do with the fact that you're playing a lot on emotion at this time of the year. For me, I'm a lot more comfortable with the quantifiable. I'm more comfortable with the sabermetrics, with interpreting that data, and a lot of it is predictive. At this time of the year, it's not nearly as predictive because everyone's kind of got different motivations, different mentalities, different mindsets. And of course, sometimes for these pitchers that are showing signs of regression, they may just not come. It just may be one of those years where they outperform their metrics or they underperform their metrics or something else is going on, you know, tumultuous pregnancy, nagging injury. We never know. We're never fully sure what's going on with a lot of these guys. And we try to make these determinations in the month of September. It's just a very high variance environment. There's a lot of volatility when it comes to baseball in the month of September. So again, I'm trying to give out further or fewer plays, I should say, in that picks and tips piece. And, you know, again, it is just one of those things where football does kind of get in the way. There are only so many hours of the day, but I don't really want to use that as a crutch because I'm still putting out that article every single day. So going through my process, still breaking everything down, things just maybe not working out as well for us here at this time of the year. But I do want to touch on a few things here for you that, you know, have kind of perplexed me a little bit here in the second half of the season. The Texas Rangers are one of those teams. The Texas Rangers are a team here with nothing to play for. They're going to fly under their season win total again, which I'm very happy about because that was my biggest season win bet of the season, was to take them under. They're 17 games under right now, 25 out in the division. They're minus 63 in run differential. Did win last night. Nice win for Mike Minor on company against Andrew Heaney. But Texas, in the second half here, second in WOBA. And in fact, I believe, last I looked, and I'd have to check this here, and I could do this right away, they're second in WOBA at 342. That's based on the Baseball Savant WOBA calculations, which are a little bit different than FanGraphs. Texas also here in the second half, from the All-Star break to now, far and away, the leader in WOBA against right-handed pitching at 360. So they've been crushing right-handed pitching in the second half. The problem for the Texas Rangers is that they've allowed the second highest WOBA at 353. Only Baltimore's pitching staff has been worse in that department. And when you go through here and look at the bottom feeders in terms of the teams that have allowed the highest WOBAs, that's weighted on base average, my favorite sabermetric statistic for calculating offensive production, Baltimore the worst at 362, Texas and Toronto 353, Cincinnati 348, Minnesota 337, Miami 334, Detroit 334, Kansas City 331, Milwaukee 328, and the Angels 328. Milwaukee, the only playoff team in that bottom 10. This is an important point to look at, and this is something I was kind of thinking about here in today's show. I was trying to run some queries over there at Killer Sports, but guess I wasn't putting in the right inputs. But when you've got these really bad teams, these teams with terrible pitching staffs, they're bringing up young hitters. And they're bringing up hitters that are hungry, that want to have an impact. They're bringing up young pitchers too. But the adjustment period, the curve from going from the minor leagues to the major leagues is not easy. And I think it's a lot harder for pitchers these days than it is for hitters, just because you get a lot of these prospect guys that throw really hard. Well, hitters are conditioned now to hit velocity. Doesn't really matter. They hit velocity. And also, with the money ball generation that we've seen over the last 15, 20 years, teams are walking more often. So if you're a young guy that throws hard, but you don't always know where it's going, it's a very difficult time in Major League Baseball for you. But I think young hitters actually do a little bit better because pitchers, some guys are relaxing the usage of their breaking balls because, you know, they're hurting. Some guys are throwing more fastballs to these young hitters because they just want to challenge them, get through some of these starts. So I think for young hitters, it's a little bit easier right now. And you can kind of see that with the fact that the Kansas City Royals are second in weighted on base average against right-handed pitching in WOBA in the second half of the season. Kansas City is horrible. They are very, very bad. Everybody knows that. But they've been a good offense against right-handed pitching here in the second half. So some of those young guys that are coming up doing a much better job than they were doing earlier on in the season. So I think one of the big takeaways here that I'm going to look to try to do maybe a little bit more often here, when we've got these two really, for lack of a better term, shitty teams going up against each other, I think we start looking at some overs with those squads. Yesterday, for example, Detroit and Chicago, Francisco Liriano, Lucas Giolito, 8-3 game. That one sailed over the total. So I think that you run into a lot of these situations here late in the year where guys want to pad numbers. You know, think about the NBA. In the NBA, when you get into March and you've got two teams that are 30 games out of the playoff chase, they play very high-scoring games, up in the 220s, the 230s. Guys want to pad their numbers. I think it becomes the same thing with offense, where, you know, maybe you're not taking as many pitches, you're hitting that first fastball, maybe you're not going through the process all the way, but you're putting a high-percentage ball in play by hitting a fastball, by attacking that first fastball. Hitters are doing that now. You know, at this time of the year, you're not interested in the 12-pitch at-bat when you're 60 games out of first place. You're just not interested in that. You're hitting the first fastball you see. You put it in play, becomes a hit or it doesn't. I think a lot of bad teams are going to be in that type of scenario here moving forward. So I do think, and we all know who the bad teams are, and again, the bad teams, right? So if we look at WOBA against right-handed pitching in the second half, the top 10, Texas, bad team, Kansas City, bad team, Dodgers, pretty good team, Washington, underachieving offense, Baltimore, bad team, Toronto, bad team, Boston, Cleveland, Milwaukee, Oakland, all playoff contenders. It's a pretty even split of bad teams and playoff contenders. So these bad teams probably going to have a little bit of offensive value. Maybe they won't go out there and beat the good teams when they play them because their pitching staffs aren't very good. Baltimore, fifth in WOBA against righties. Baltimore, worst in pitching WOBA. Texas, first in WOBA against righties, second worst in pitching WOBA. Toronto, sixth in WOBA against righties in the second half, third highest WOBA against. It's just the way that it goes. I think these bad teams are going to play a lot of high-scoring games here as we go throughout the rest of the season. And you've got offenses like a Toronto that underachieved throughout the year, made a lot of high-velocity contact, didn't have much to show for it. Now it's kind of coming around a little bit for them. Washington, same thing. Team that has a lot of talent, underachieved quite a bit earlier on in the year. Now it's starting to come around for them. But I think in the month of September, there's this expectation that offense goes down because the temperatures are getting a little bit cooler. I don't think that's the case at all. Teams are facing lower calibers of pitching staffs at this time of the year because of call-ups, because of spot starters, and those prospects that are coming up that already have high workloads. And also, be honest here, I mean, I'm not going to turn this into any sort of political statement or anything like that, but we've had a lot of warmer months of September lately. So the ball is still traveling much better than it used to in this last month of the regular season. And I was looking through some of the batting splits here. September is actually a pretty good month for offense league-wide relative to the rest of the months of the year. Take July out of the equation with the All-Star break and a fewer number of games. September's right in line there with months like August and May. So, you know, there's still a lot of offense to be had. And I think that when you look at, you know, a lot of these lines, a lot of odds makers are just going to look at these teams and say, well, this team's not very good. They've been bad offensively throughout the year. I think there's some totals value in playing on those types of teams. The Torontos, the Baltimores. Of course, Toronto got shut out last night. But the Torontos, the Baltimores, the Kansas Cities, teams like that, I think will be invested offensively. They're just really bad because they don't have the pitching staffs. They do not have guys that can go out there and put up zeros. And that certainly doesn't change when you start getting the prospects up there. So again, I think overs with bad teams are a way to look here at the tail end of the Major League Baseball season. And also, too, something very important I think you want to keep in mind here, bullpen usage for contenders. Look at Oakland yesterday, for example. Oakland up 1-0 through six innings, loses that game 5-1. Bullpen has been worked to the bone. And this is something that happens. When you play a lot of good baseball and you're winning a lot of games, you're not going to win blowouts day in and day out. You're going to wind up winning a lot of 1- and 2-run games where you have to use those primary relievers a lot. So for Oakland here, I think there's a chance that they do kind of fall off a little bit. Starting rotation in line for regression to begin with, and the bullpen has worked a ton. When you look at bullpen workload here, over the last couple of weeks, over the last 30 days, Oakland right up at the top. They do trail Tampa Bay because Tampa Bay using that opener concept where they've got starters working 4 or 5 innings in relief, and that does skew the numbers a little bit here. For example, over the last 5 days, keep in mind Tampa Bay using that opener concept a little bit more often than not. 66 2/3 innings for the Tampa Bay bullpen over the last 2 weeks. Oakland 64.2. That's the second most by 6 1/3 innings over Boston, who's third with 58.1. Then Milwaukee 53.2 on down from there. So Oakland is probably a little bit of a fade team here at this point for me. I'm not necessarily against them here today with Luis Severino on the mound, although I do think that the Yankees are in a decent spot there against Mike Fiers, who is a regression candidate. But Oakland is a team that I'll probably have on my fade radar over the next little while, unless they start blowing some teams out, unless they start getting through some of these games where they can give their bullpen a blow. You know, Tampa Bay, a team that I would expect to kind of slow down a little bit here. Now, they do have some more starters in the mix with Glass now that Snell is back as well. But still, this is a team, a lot of usage for that bullpen, a lot of guys throwing a lot of innings. There's only so much the human arm can take when it comes to that type of workload. You look at other contenders. Milwaukee's going to burn out this bullpen, trying to do anything that they can to get home field in that wild card. And, of course, if they win today over the Chicago Cubs, Milwaukee would only be 2 games out in the division. Avoid that wild card game, which is a massive bonus. Anything can happen in a 1-game playoff. You get 3, 4, or 5 games in the division series. That's huge for you. So I think Milwaukee really works this bullpen hard, as they've worked their bullpen hard throughout the season here, to try and improve their standing in the Central Division, at the very least, staying ahead of St. Louis, getting that game at home there at Miller Park, where they can really pack that place in Milwaukee. Bullpen usage, so very important here at this time of the year. The Boston Red Sox are another team really using their bullpen extensively here of late, and I'm not entirely sure why. 96-44, they're 9.5 games up on Houston for home field in the American League. They've got home field locked up pretty much overall if they go all the way to the World Series. Calm down with the bullpen, Alex Cora. Chill out with that group. You know, it's just one of those things where you want to really manage your workloads here if you're a team. I think the Indians may end up doing this, having more options now. They call up a guy like Adam Rosales. They've got Yandy Diaz on the team. They bring in Josh Donaldson. I think we do start to see Jose Ramirez and Francisco Lindor get some days off here a little bit. That was a mistake they made last year, chasing down the streak record. This year, I don't think they make that mistake. Teams that have the luxury to do that, probably going to do a little bit of what the Indians are doing here and struggle against teams that just aren't very good. A lot of teams don't really have the luxury to do that right now. If Oakland falls off a little bit and Houston gets some separation, they may be a team that goes that route because they've had some injury problems here with some of their guys as they've gone throughout the season. Now, of course, there are other considerations as well on an individual and a team level. This is something I want to touch on here to wrap up this portion of the segment, and then I'll throw out some of my thoughts for tonight and tomorrow. But round numbers, from a player standpoint, from a team standpoint, going 500 is better than going 80-82. just from a mental standpoint, it's a better thing for teams. Going 82-80 is even better. So if you've got teams, as we head into the last week of the season here, and I mentioned this today because I don't know how much more baseball I'll talk on the show. If you've got teams that are trying to reach some of those thresholds, they're probably play-on teams. They will still be invested late in the year to go 82-80 instead of 80-82 or 81-81. Does it mean anything over the long term? No, not at all. Doesn't really mean much of anything. But to these guys and their competitive spirits, they want something to show for the season. The Pittsburgh Pirates, I think, are a prime example here. 68-71. They're not a playoff team. This is not going to happen. San Francisco Giants could be another example of this. That's 68-72. I would think that those are two teams that want to push to get to 500 or better by the end of the year. So maybe the Giants, as we get deeper into the season here, or deeper in the month of September, become a play-on team. They've dropped four straight to fall from 500 to four games under. Pittsburgh playing a little bit better here of late. They've won a couple in a row, almost an even run differential. Some of those things can be betting angles here at this time of the year. You've got teams looking to avoid 100 losses, San Diego being one of them. Of course, you've got Kansas City is going to lose 100 no matter what. The White Sox should be safe here. They've only got 23 games left to go. They only have 83 losses. But looking to avoid some of those embarrassing benchmarks, teams will play for those. There will be betting opportunities on teams looking to avoid some kind of embarrassment, like 100 losses, like 90 losses, something like that. Then on an individual level, pitchers that, call-ups that don't have a win yet, guys really want to get that for their teammates. 300, 30 home runs, 100 RBI. Guys want those things. They want those benchmarks for arbitration. They want them for their own personal records. They want them for free agent contracts. Those are all things that guys on an individual level will be looking to get. So if you go down through these teams and look at their rosters and their statistics and see several guys that are going for some of those benchmarks, probably a play-on team, because those are hitters that will remain invested. 15 wins, 10 wins, ERA under 4, stuff like that. Guys get a little bit of extra focus when they're in those types of situations. So I think that you can find a lot of play-on angles here. Again, they're not necessarily quantifiable. They're more emotional, more gray area in nature. And that's why September probably not a great month for me overall when it comes to baseball. But those are some talking points. Those are some things that you can look to use to your advantage a little bit. So as we look at the card for Wednesday here, there are a couple of games I really like. One of them being Tampa Bay, game 965, 966 on the board. They'll send Tyler Glass now out to the mound against Aaron Sanchez. This Toronto offense, which, as I mentioned, has been very good against righties here in the second half of the season, top three in WOBA. They're ninth overall in weighted on base average since the All-Star break. They make a lot of hard contact. But for Tyler Glass now here, a guy that Tyler Glass now was fired when I was doing the Better's Box over the summer, the Rays have a 6'8" pitching coach. Tyler Glass now stands 6'8". I think it's very hard for pitching coaches that don't have a frame of reference to help guys that are different. Submariners, sidearmers. We're seeing one with the Indians right now in Adam Simber. He's a mess mechanically right now. I don't think Carl Willis knows how to fix it. I don't think Scott Acheson knows how to fix it. They're going to have to find a sidearm guy to come in and sort of talk to him a little bit and figure out what the problem is here for that guy. I don't know if they can find somebody out there to do that, be a little bit of a consultant or something like that. But if you don't have a frame of reference, if you've got a guy that's anywhere from 5'11 to 6'2, you probably know how to work with that guy. If you got a guy who's 6'8 or throws with some sort of weird motion, it's really hard. For Tyler Glass now, his pitching coach is 6'8". So they've been able to work on a lot of different things with him, really refining his arsenal. He incorporated a slider this year for the first time, so that's been a work in progress. And he's also throwing up in the zone more with the fastball. When you talk about guys that are 6'8", they get really, really good extension. So the perceived velocity, even higher than the actual velocity relative to pitchers that are regularly sized at 6'2", 6'3", something like that. So for Glass now, with his extension, he's releasing the ball much closer to home plate. The Rays have worked on that with him in terms of working up in the zone. And what that does is when a hitter sees a ball up there, it's very hard to lay off because you see that ball the entire time. If it starts middle of the zone, you can kind of assume it's going to go down a little bit. So you either start your swing plane a little bit differently, or you can assume it's going out of the strike zone. For Glasnow, you know, if, as long as he's tunneling properly with his fastball, his slider, and that plus curveball that he's got, he's a much tougher guy to hit. So Glasnow doesn't have a win yet with the Rays in his six starts, but a 3.23 ERA, 3.44 FIP, 3.31 xFIP, 38 strikeouts and 30 and two-thirds innings of work, only 10 walks. He's a guy that's really improving. He's found a pitching coach that can understand him and relate to him. And David Lorilla over at Fangraphs wrote a phenomenal piece on this last week. But Glasnow is a buy candidate for me the rest of the way here this season, because he's got a pitching coach that can work with him, and because he's used those adjustments in a very positive way, generating a lot of swings and misses, a lot of strikeouts. I like Tyler Glasnow a lot. I don't know why this line is moving down. I completely disagree with what's going on with this number. Yes, Toronto's been much better offensively here, but how much are they going to have to score to make up for Aaron Sanchez? 11 runs allowed on 18 hits in his 8 1/3 innings since coming off the DL. So a lot of times I do look to fade guys coming off the DL, or at the very least I'll stay away from them because there's some unknown. There's some uncertainty there. Well, when it comes to Sanchez, there was no uncertainty. Made 3 rehab starts prior to his return, gave up 9 runs on 13 hits in 11 innings, walked 10 and struck out 11. So he had a strikeout per inning, but he also walked 10. And these were starts against rookie hitters, high A and double A. So Aaron Sanchez was going to come back and struggle. We can make that assumption based on how his stuff and his control was in those rehab starts. He's done nothing to show us differently here at this point in time. So I'll lay the price here tonight with Tampa Bay, buying on Glasnow, selling Sanchez. And one other thing I think is very important to point out here, and I've noticed this with some of these lines here recently, a lot of recency bias in the betting market with some of these numbers that are out there. You see today, for example, Tanner Roark favored against St. Louis and Miles Mikolas. Miles Mikolas has been phenomenal all season long. Tanner Roark has been really good in the second half. Also, Washington a little bit better offensively here of late. In some instances, the sports books and the odds makers and the risk managers are throwing out the full body of work and only focusing on a small recent sample size of starts. Now, I think Roark was a positive regression candidate. I'm not necessarily surprised to see this, but I am surprised to see them a favorite to the degree that they are here tonight against St. Louis. So I think from a value standpoint, with Mikolas, with the season he's put together, with what this St. Louis offense has been doing over the last several weeks, and how they've played under Mike Schilt, I think this is a spot to back St. Louis tonight. Again, I get why Washington's favored, because recency bias has played a role in this number, but I think this line is at least 10 to 15 cents too high. I get best, it's a money line pick'em situation. I'll take that little bit of value here tonight with St. Louis. So again, you want to find this balance here of looking at pitchers to buy because you think their stock is rising, then also looking to see if recency bias is justified, if it's something that should be kept as part of the equation. Only 4 games here on Thursday night: San Diego, Cincinnati, Cubs, Nationals, Indians, Blue Jays, Braves, and Diamondbacks. So some decent games on the docket for Thursday, but a good chance for a lot of these teams to get a blow. Everybody played on Labor Day, only 8 teams playing here on Thursday. So with the small card, I don't see too much that I'm invested and interested in. I do think you could look at the under in Atlanta and Arizona. Again, that's probably a number that's 7.5, I would say, maybe as low as 7. Anibal Sanchez doing a great job with contact management. Zach Greinke has been terrific of late. I would also look at Arizona on that one if the number's not too high. My guess, that number is probably minus 145, minus 150 on Arizona, which is a little bit higher than I'd like to invest in. But still for Atlanta here, you know, long travel spot, coming off of playing interleague play against Boston, going out west to Chase Field, not used to the humidor. Maybe Arizona a little bit worth the price there. But again, we'll see what that number looks like. So, yeah, like I said, baseball is very tough this time of the year because you have to make a lot of inferences, a lot of implications. And I don't feel comfortable with that because I like the quantifiable, because I like the predictive value in statistics. So we'll have a couple plays a day here and there, 2, 3, sometimes 4 on the high end. But, you know, it is football time for a lot of people, and that is something that we will be keeping in mind here on Bang the Book Radio. Coming up on our Thursday edition of the show, Two professional handicappers joined me. The first, Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. The second, Tony George from Doc Sports. Friday, we'll talk Super Contest. Hopefully by then I'll have my card kind of figured out a little bit. And also, we should be getting Brent from DSI Sportsbook for the odds report. I haven't talked to him yet since he's got back in town, but we should be able to get that set up for Friday's edition of the show. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.